You can see we're in competition here. We repeat, I believe, for the third time. Holiness is a life of sacrifice.
He is going to quit here, Father. Please? I told him you were a black belt. That was the truth.
I won't repeat it again. Sacrifice of what? Sacrifice, first of all, of material possessions. Sacrifice of legitimate pleasures. And above all, the sacrifice of our own self-will. And those three are plenty. They are everything. What do the Beatitudes do? They spell out this sacrifice. Next question. To whom were the Beatitudes originally given? They were given originally to the disciples. They were not given to the multitude. The Sermon on the Mount begins with the Beatitudes. And that's before Christ spoke to the multitude. A disciple, as we've at least implied, we can now spell it out, is one who has learned the teaching of Christ, who has acquired the mind of Christ. We distinguish between a student who is being taught and a disciple who has been taught. And I'm speaking, I believe, to the right audience. We then are to have acquired, made our own, assimilated the teaching of Christ so that we in turn can teach others. Next question. What were the circumstances in which the Beatitudes were given? First, Christ had just called the apostles. And the Beatitudes were their principles of formation. If there is one thing that a person who is to teach others must receive, it is formation. And in this sequence of importance, formation in the spiritual life and formation in the knowledge of sacred doctrine. The Beatitudes then spelled out the principles of the spiritual formation of the disciples. And I speak here from autobiographical experience. What Ignatius did back in the 16th century, and six whole nations were lost to the Catholic Church. England, Scotland, Wales, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark completely lost in the 16th century. By the way, but not Ireland. Did you know that? And large parts of Germany and Switzerland. And looking back over that period, which in many ways is a kind of prelude to the 20th century. Ignorance of their faith by the people, and I have to say this, and the immorality of the clergy. That is an explosive combination. And need I say, that is the situation today. What was the order or the sequence in which Christ gave his disciples the Beatitudes? They come in three parts. Part one, first he gave them the Beatitudes. And the church over the centuries has built her teaching of the Beatitudes on St. Matthew's and not St. Luke's version. St. Luke has four Beatitudes and what may be called four maledictions, four promises of happiness and four threats or four woes of what follows for those who do not live up to what Christ expects of his followers. First, the Beatitudes. Then he told the disciples, still them, those who are to train, teach, and inspire others. He told them that they, mind also underline the word they, were the salt of the earth, which is the figurative meaning for strengthening others. Then he told them the next verse, and they were to be the light of the world, to enlighten others. In order to be able to lead others, teach them, you must first of all have both the virtue and the gift of fortitude. Only strong people can strengthen others. Only courageous people can encourage others. And the foundation for courage in the will is conviction in the mind. Only convinced people are courageous people. Everyone else is a coward. How the church needs convinced believers who are not only willing already, but would be happy, thrilled to lay down their lives for what they know is true. I have to use the two names. This is not Carl Runner. This is not Edward Skillebex. And thirdly, Christ explained that the Beatitudes are a fulfillment of the old law. The new law is more demanding. And just for the record, in the years of teaching Protestant theology, I have about a dozen definitions of Protestantism that I've used over the years. One of my descriptions of Protestantism, it is Old Testament Christianity. Like what? Why, like divorcing and remarrying. The new law is more demanding, which means the following of Christ is more difficult. There are now, by actual count, I have an international list of all the, shall I say, accredited Protestant denominations in the world. My last listing is over 4,000 distinct denominations. Every single, hear it, every single break from Catholic unity has been to choose the easier way to keep the name Christ, keep the name Christian, but will ease up on what is admittedly the difficult teaching of Jesus Christ. There has never been known, this is now almost 2,000 years, there has never been known a single heresy that was not satisfied with the demands of the Catholic Church in the practice of the moral law. Every heretic, they'd write books. They can write. But the bottom line is to make it easier to follow Christ. Over the years in teaching Protestantism, for the record, there are 9 graduate courses in Protestantism that I've taught over the years. I'll tell them. There are 54 in the standard edition of Luther's works, 54 volumes to the Luther writings. Some, by the way, of Luther's writings have never been translated into any English and other language. Some have not even been removed from manuscript. They are so incredible. And what Luther says about Jesus Christ. I tell people, you can spare yourself the trouble of reading those 54 volumes. All you need to know is one word, a monosyllable, sex. Say that again. To ease up. For the married, well, to remarry. And in fact, even before he did that, Luther already allowed, remember Philip of Hesse? Even allowed him to have 2 wives simultaneously. And for the clergy, of course, priests should marry. And I have to say this, otherwise I wouldn't be talking the real world to you. One of the most popular books in Catholic seminaries in the United States, by Philip Keane, allows priests to enjoy I mean it. Sexual experience. And the archbishop who gave the imprimatur, thank God the Vatican had to step in and move the imprimatur, where the books are still sold and used. Am I clear? Let's make sure that we know what these Beatitudes are all about. They're demanding. What are some of the features of all eight Beatitudes before we go into detail? Beatitude means blessedness. And I was so pleased to see, and I just, somebody picked up a copy. Now, this is the new American Bible. I was so pleased they've improved. The former American Bible, Catholic edition, of course, said, happy are those and happy are others. It is now blessed. That's the right word. The Jerusalem Bible, oh, by the way, unless I'm mistaken, even the new edition of the Jerusalem Bible has caught up with reality. Blessed is not the same as happy. To be blessed is to be made happy by God. There's quite a difference. Do people in Canada have the Snoopy cartoons? Have you ever seen a cartoon with happiness is, and then, well, whoever is lying in the hammock with a mint julep next to the hammock? To be blessed is to be made happy and by God. And that's the real key. To believe that only He will provide true happiness on His conditions. And this is practically what the world, as secularism, is all about. Providing multi-billion dollar substitutes for true happiness. And how many people are victimized by the deceit? Each beatitude is part of the new covenant of the sacred contract. A covenant is a contract. A contract, by definition, is bilateral. But Christ, wise person that He was, He began first with a promise, and then, after each promise, the condition. Consequently, before we go into the Beatitudes, the eight Beatitudes are really eight promises followed by eight conditions. In effect, I will make you happy if whatever else the Beatitudes recognize, they recognize our free will. If only, dear Lord, if only more people realized they have a free will. If only they realized that if they chose what Christ wants us to choose, they will be happy. Question. Why does any rational person choose anything? Isn't it to get some satisfaction from it, right? Now the Beatitudes in sequence. I think I may go till 1 minute to three. Thank you, Father. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Notice, poor in spirit. This has to do with material possessions. The church's centuries of interpretation, it has to do with material poverty. Now, there are two kinds of material poverty. There's the material poverty of necessity and the material poverty of choice. Most of the human race has no choice. They are living in the poverty of necessity. There are, however, some who take a vow of poverty. Yours truly, all the Benedictines who operate this abbey. And religious life, this the history of religious life, is only as strong as the members of religious communities are faithful to their poverty. And how people can deceive themselves. Concretely, what does poverty in spirit mean? It means that both those who are actually poor and those who are not necessarily materially poor must practice poverty of spirit. Those who are actually poor just don't have. They have poverty in spirit if they are not angry at others who have because they have not. They do not envy those who do have. This, by the way, has been the formula of communism for over 100 years, working on people's anger and envy. I began reading Karl Marx at the age of 14, much too soon. Is it a sin to have material possessions? No. Is it even a sin to, whatever the word nowadays means, to be wealthy? Incidentally, who knows where the modern income tax, you pay income tax in Canada? We sure do. We sure do in the United States. Who knows where that idea began? Who remembers? in the Communist Manifesto of Karl Marx. Thanks, Karl. Thanks. Profoundly influenced the whole world. Those who